Hello there and welcome into another edition of The Intersection with conversation about a variety of topics including news, information, and lifestyles approached from a Christian worldview perspective. Some very timely thoughts ahead from author and blogger Wendy Speak, who stresses the importance of releasing God-given creativity, especially during the Christmas season. Then it's Messianic Rabbi Jonathan Bernis of Jewish Voice Ministries International offering some biblical insight into matters relative to the supernatural. Plus, author and spoken word artist David Bowden sharing his perspective on those times in which Christians may feel that God is absent. And on this edition of The Intersection, some comments on public policy from Kim Troby of Family Policy Alliance, who projects how some issues might be affected by a change of leadership in the White House. Finally, Dan Celia of Financial Issues comments on the recent Black Friday economic picture, the rise in the stock market, consumer confidence, and how believers can respond. This is The Intersection, a production of The Meeting House. I'm Bob Crittenden. Wendy Speak is a blogger who has a background in acting and storytelling. She's co-written a book with Kelly Stewart called Life Creative, Inspiration for Today's Renaissance Mom, in which they encourage women to exercise the creativity that God has given to them. Here's Wendy with some comments, including her underscoring of the importance of living out that message this time of year.
To the lady out there who feels like she's lost herself in the midst of motherhood. Man, I used to love doing this or doing that. I used to paint, I used to sew, I used to bake. And now, man, I'm just getting through and all those things I used to enjoy are on the back burner. I really encourage moms to bring it into your home life. And there's no better time to get creative than during this holiday season, perhaps. And I do believe that our artistry morphs. I mean, I used to be on TV shows and now I'm writing blog posts and books. But it's the same core component of a storyteller. And it's morphed because my life has needed to in this intense season of motherhood. But at Christmas time, I'm sending Christmas cards. I'm taking pictures. I'm putting on music. I'm making CDs for each of my kids to listen to that have their favorite Christmas songs on it. I'm using that same core component of creative me, and I'm expressing it during the holidays. And I just think it's a wonderful time for moms who feel like they've lost some of these delightful parts of themselves. Maybe I used to knit, but there's no time. Well, maybe as you're watching the Hallmark Christmas specials after the kids have gone down, you get out your needles and you're making each of the kids matching scarves. And, you know, you do some of those things. But you said the tendency can be also to just get too busy. And so I suggest here at the very beginning of December to do those things now and let it be part of your Advent worshipful time to say, God, I'm worshiping you by expressing all these wonderful parts of how you made me as loving gifts to other, because I believe that there is gospel power in the way that he made us. Even in this part of our in his image design as creative people, expressing it in the way that we make good food and we put apple cider on the stove top while we're doing things with our family. These are all creative acts, but I say focus on them now here at the beginning of December so you're not rushed in those real holy days leading up till Christmas.
Someone might say, Wendy, you know, you're a creative person and you have these gifts and you tell stories and you speak and you write books and you do all of these things. I'm just not a creative person. What would you say to that person, and how could the book Life Creative speak to a person that has that mindset?
I'm so glad you asked that question. I'm going to start with a very umbrella answer that's not going to speak to the heart of a person. It's just theological, I guess, which is the very first couple of words, I think the first four words in the Bible are in the beginning God, nope, that would be five words, created. In the beginning God created. And then another chapter back, it says that he created us in his image. So we have a very multifaceted God. He is just and he is compassionate. He is full of grace and mercy, but he's also a creator. And so we have bits of all of that character bound up in all of us. And so I think that when we think, oh, I'm creative or I'm not creative, we think I paint or I create, you know, I knit scarves. And if I don't do one of those, if I can't even draw a stick figure, then I'm not creative. But all of us have part of this creative in his image design woven into us fearfully and wonderfully. And so I would say, nope, this is about you too, but your creativity doesn't have to look like my creativity. So that would be how I bring it from a very broad answer to a personal answer. It can be that you just enjoy sitting down with your children when they're coloring and picking up some pencils and coloring in the lines with them. Or here at Christmas time, gee, I'm not very creative. I'm not going to hand make the gifts. When I try to make cards, they look dumb. So maybe you enjoy photography. Maybe you take a picture of your kids together and it becomes the insert picture inside your card that you buy. Or maybe, I remember when my children were very little, the third born wasn't yet walking, because I remember I had to carry him and put his feet down on the project. I rolled out a huge slab of butcher's paper, and I put out a couple of plates with red paint and one with green paint, and my toddlers stepped in the paint and then ran across the paper, and I did the little baby's feet on my own. You know, I helped him do it. And then I cut it up when it dried, and that became our gift wrap.
Wendy Speak here on The Intersection. You can learn more through the website lifecreative.me or go to wendyspeak with an E on the end, .com. Well, this is The Intersection Podcast with Messianic Rabbi Jonathan Bernis, President and CEO of Jewish Voice Ministries International. In a recent conversation, he discussed material relative to his book, A Rabbi Looks at the Supernatural, a revealing look at angels, demons, miracles, heaven, and hell. Here now is Jonathan Bernis.
Well, Bob, there was a book written a number of years ago by a rabbi who asked this and answered this question, why do bad things happen to good people? And he concluded either God is not all-powerful or he's not all-loving. And as I studied the scriptures, I came up with a very different answer. God is all-loving. That's good news. God is all-powerful. That is good news. However, we humankind entered into a state of separation from God. That's a reality of scripture, of Torah. In Genesis 3, we disobeyed God, and the world entered into a state, mankind entered into a state of separation from God. The world entered into a state of disrepair. And that's the bad news, that we all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. We're separated from God. Evil then came into the world. Death came into the world. All is declared by the Lord himself would happen. The whole world shifted radically, and it's not, the question isn't, is God not all-loving or not all-powerful? The answer is that there is no one good. So it's not why do bad things happen to good people, it's no one is good. Bad things happen to bad people. I know that shocks so many, but that's the reality. Evil, sickness, disease is all the result of the fall of man. The good news is God paved a way for that, for the world to be repaired, for mankind to be repaired, and it's through the person of Jesus Christ. We call him by his Hebrew name, Yeshua HaMashiach.
So as we think about our encounters and our interaction with the supernatural today, what are some of the points that you bring up with respect to believers in Christ in this day in which we live, experiencing more of the authentic supernatural power of God?
Well, good. Thank you. Our ministry, Jewish Voice, works in many developing nations, in Africa, in India. And we see a whole different worldview where people are open to the supernatural. In the West, we're very materialistic, we're very rationalistic, and I think that actually holds us back, Bob, from seeing the supernatural reality that exists in the world, the supernatural reality revealed in the scriptures, and holds us back from entering in. And we've got to look at the world through different lenses and begin to see that there is truly an invisible world, both evil and good, and that we have power in the supernatural realm in the name of Jesus, through faith in his name. And we have power to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy. And we have weapons, the weapons of our warfare. Prayer are powerful for the pulling down of strongholds. And when we enter into this realm, when we begin to shift into this worldview, we begin to understand that a lot of the activity that we're trying to deal with in the natural realm is really in the supernatural realm, and we have to deal with it in the supernatural realm in prayer, understanding that these are spiritual forces.
Jonathan Burness here on The Intersection. Find out more by visiting the website jewishvoice.org. The Intersection continues now with author and spoken word artist David Bowden. In a recent conversation, he shared material related to his book, When God Isn't There, Why God Is Farther Than You Think, But Closer Than You Dare Imagine. Here's David Bowden.
It really is a reality that for a lot of Christians, and I would argue for most Christians, there's been a time in their life when it felt like God wasn't there in the way he used to be, or he's not there in the way you want him to be, or he's not there in the amount of his presence that you want isn't really there. And so I think all of us, if we're honest, have had the experience of feeling like God was farther from us than we wanted. But beyond experience and sensory things that are so subjective, we also have objective realities in the Bible where the Bible talks about God moving away and turning his eyes and closing his ears and creating relational distance from us. And so I think as Christians, we need to become more comfortable talking about these things so that we can use objective truths in the Bible to understand these subjective experiences we have when God feels far in our lives.
So what inspired this subject matter in you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when I was living in the Philippines with my wife, working with Give a Goat, I was reading my Bible one morning. I was reading John 6, and he's feeding the 5,000, and they try to make him king by force, and Jesus withdraws. He leaves the people and goes to the mountain by himself to pray. And I just felt like the Holy Spirit asked me a question, and it was this. It was, when we try to make Jesus into something he's not, does he withdraw from us? And so it got me reading and studying the Bible on, well, does God ever move? Does God ever withdraw? And what would that look like? And that was coming after a long season of my life where I kind of just felt like I was always praying ceiling prayers, these prayers that just seemed to never go up farther than the ceiling. And God had felt far from me while I was getting my undergraduate degree in Bible, ironically. And so it was a very fruitful study for me to see what I had gone through as someone who loved the Lord but felt far from him, and now someone who's feeling convicted to study God's absence in the Bible.
Well, and as you studied that, and of course, as you mentioned, born out of firsthand experience with God's absence, if we can put it like that, what are some of the things you discovered as far as perhaps why God would withdraw from someone or be absent, or at least we would feel distant from him?
Yeah, there's lots of ways to answer that question, but there's one governing way. And it's that for the longest time, I kind of viewed God's presence as one thing. But God's not like us. Like, you and I can really only be present in one or two senses. Like, I'm present right now at my office at the church. But I'm also present with my voice with you and whoever else is listening. So I'm present in two ways right now. God, though, he can be present in more than those ways. He's present at least in four different ways. He's generally present in his omnipresence. He's everywhere at once, upholding the world by the word of his power. He's specially or relationally present with Christians. So he's present with Christians in a way that he's absent from non-Christians. So right there, we have a proof case that God can be absent in some sense and present in another. And then he's also visibly present. We see that in the Bible. He shows up in these theophanic visions where people see the glory of God. But then there's one aspect of his presence that's completely different from all the rest, and it's his actual presence. It's the fullness of who he is. It's the glory that Moses longed to look at in the cleft of the rock when he said, "Show me your glory. Let me see your face." And that is the presence of God we most long for and yet will not have until we dwell with him in heaven.
Mm. And you, in the book, introduce something called the Moses principle. Work that out, if you would.
Sure. Yeah, it's one of my favorite things in the book, so I'm glad you brought it up. The Moses principle is this idea that Moses, he was talking with God in a tent of meeting right after coming off Sinai and right before going back up Sinai to see God in the cleft of the rock. And he asked God this audacious request in Exodus 33:18. He says, "Show me your glory." And as I was studying God's presence and absence, I was like, hold on a second, Moses. Like, haven't you already seen a lot of God's glory? You know, aren't you the one who heard him speak, I am, in the burning bush and saw him descend and all the 10 plagues and saw him part the Red Sea and talk to him in a thick, dark cloud in the tent of meeting and at Mount Sinai? Haven't you already seen enough of God's glory? But apparently Moses did not. He wanted more of God's glory. And so the Moses principle is that more wants more. The more of God we get, the more of God we want. And so wanting more of God than we currently have, we often translate that as absence, but it might just be desire. And God's giving us an increased amount of desire for us, not so that we'll feel far from him, but so that we would use that desire to pursue more of God.
David Bowden here on The Intersection. You can find out more by going to his website. It's dbpoetry.com. This is The Intersection Podcast, a weekly production of The Meeting House. You can find out more through the website, meetinghouseonline.info. There you'll find a link to the download center marked Meeting House On Demand, through which you can listen to, download, or share full conversations with recent guests featured on The Intersection Podcast. Also, through that site, you can subscribe to The Intersection and have it delivered to your podcast receiving software, including iTunes, on a weekly basis. Two blogs are accessible. Also, you can follow me on Twitter and access the Meeting House Facebook page. You can also get connected to video content. Again, that website address is meetinghouseonline.info. Kim Trobe is Manager of Communications for Family Policy Alliance, a public policy partner of Focus on the Family. Recently, she talked with me about matters relative to the Trump presidency. From that conversation, this is Kim Trobe.
Well, Bob, a couple of months ago, we put out a letter to Donald Trump because we were asking questions. And you may have remembered when we had the 700-plus evangelical leaders meet with him, he did answer quite a few of those questions that we had posed to him. Where do you stand on life? Where do you stand on defunding Planned Parenthood? Where do you stand on marriage between one man and one woman? What about Obamacare? Just a lot of things that are very near and dear to values voters' hearts. And we got a lot of answers from that, but there are still a few things that were not answered. So we've kept that letter on our website, and some people still continue to click on it and contact Donald Trump and ask him for answers on it. And that's really why we keep it around, is because we understand that even though we have a Republican in the White House and we have the Senate and the House under Republican control right now, that doesn't always necessarily mean that they're going to hold to the promises that they made or that they are going to do the things that they said they were going to do. Now, I don't want people out there listening to get discouraged by that, because for the first time in a very long time, we all have the chance to play offense. And so now, instead of holding back and instead of just reacting to things, we can actually get out there and we can start to make a difference. We can start to ask this Republican majority to do the things that they said they were going to do, and we can make a difference for life and religious freedom, family values, all of those kinds of things. So on our website, Stuart and Paul Weber, our CEO, recently did a video from South Dakota. They were at Mount Rushmore doing some things with our Family Policy Alliance there, called the Family Heritage Alliance of South Dakota. And so they were there, and right in front of the Mount Rushmore Monument, they were talking about it's time for action. And that's a really great way to put this. What we're looking for from people is, what would you like to see this administration and this Republican majority do now that we're on offense? So maybe it would be defunding Planned Parenthood, taking away taxpayer funding of one of the largest abortion sellers in our nation, and holding their feet to the fire when it comes to the sale of baby body parts, and saying that's not going to happen anymore because we hold to the sanctity of human life. And that means we're not going to do that anymore. That's trafficking in body parts of a group of people, preborn babies, who are completely incapable of taking care of themselves. And so we're going to stand in the gap for that. Maybe you're interested in Obamacare being either repealed or provisions of it replaced. We want to hear about that. What are the things that you think could be salvaged from Obamacare, if anything, and what do you think needs to go? What about the Johnson Amendment? You know, that was an amendment passed back in the 1950s that really shackled pastors when it came to being able to talk about politics from the pulpit. President-elect Trump has said he would repeal that or work to get that repealed, and that would really free up pastors to be able to talk about critical issues in our nation and in the political realm without fear of losing their nonprofit status. So that's just a short list of some of the things that could be on your wish list. So we're asking people right now to email us, that's mail, M-A-I-L, at familypolicyalliance.com, mail at familypolicyalliance.com. Send us all of your ideas of what you would like this Republican majority to do in the first year or two in which they're in office. And what we're going to do is we're going to start asking them to do the things that they said they're going to do. And we're going to include you in that by having you contact your lawmakers and tell them, hey, here's what I'd like to see happen. Make this happen for me. And so that's one of the exciting things that we're doing here at Family Policy Alliance. And we want you guys to be involved in that.
Kim Troby here on The Intersection. The Alliance website is familypolicyalliance.com. Well, this is The Intersection Podcast with Dan Celia, who serves as CEO of Financial Issues Stewardship Ministries. In our recent conversation, he talked about the recent Black Friday economic picture, as well as the rise in the stock market, consumer confidence, and how believers can respond. Here now is Dan Celia.
Well, it's nothing more than a confidence, a penned-up confidence that has been going on for years, and people, and I shouldn't just say consumers, I should say that a business confidence just went through the roof. This we see a consumer confidence number this week that was off the charts. It was 107. I said that I expected it to be 103, 104, higher than what was expected. Did not expect 107. And that was a month of November number. And this is all enthusiasm and driven by consumer confidence. And it just goes to show, and it's something I talk about all the time, Bob, consumer confidence is probably one of the most important indicators of where we are headed in the economy, where we currently are, and where we have been. And when we look at the consumer confidence, it gives us a sense of where we've been, which is down in the dumps, so to speak, for a very long time. And people are feeling good about, whether you like Donald Trump or not, they're feeling good about a businessman, someone that would appear as though he's truly going to get some things done in Washington in probably a very unorthodox way, since he is not a politician. And people are feeling good about the prospects of getting a job, keeping the job they have, and seeing an economy turn around. And that's exactly what we have. Now, here's the surprise to me, Bob, was that it is immediate. We have seen this spillover of that enthusiasm so quickly in the markets. And I have to tell you, I expected it, but I didn't expect it this soon after the election. I thought there was going to be a 3 or 4 week period where it was going to take corporate America and even consuming America a chance to kind of figure all this out and start to feel good. And I was so wrong about that, and as everybody else was. It is really amazing, but it is the power of consumer confidence.
How can we appropriate the resources that God has given to us in these economic conditions without being overconfident to the extent that we might make decisions with our dollars that might not be the best for us?
Well, you know what, Bob, the one thing we don't want to happen is that we get too overly confident. Here's the beauty of what we have today. We have a time where it's very close to our memory of 2008 and the aftermath of that for years. And we need to make sure that we keep that at the very forefront of our minds so we don't forget. We know that one of our problems was in 2008, as we tried to get on our feet again, was either debt or one of the benefits was no debt, one or the other. And those of us that have been through that, the people that have been through that, need to remember that as enthusiastic as you are about the economy growing, don't allow that to spill over to some great lessons that you have learned about being out of debt, of living your life on needs, not wants. That has not been great for the economy because people aren't spending, but it's okay. Don't start to change your mentality. Try to keep that thought of not being in debt, because now you should remember and understand how beneficial that is for your family not to be in debt. So I'm concerned over that, because when we see this kind of enthusiasm, we generally get over enthusiastic and start thinking, hey, this is never going to end. Trust me, as good as the administration might be, there will be another day where there will be another recession, and it'll be a severe recession. That is the way it has always been, and this will be no different.
Dan Celia here on The Intersection. Find out more by going to the website financialissues.org. Well, we are nearing the end of this edition of the Intersection Podcast, a weekly production of the Meeting House. Again, that website address is meetinghouseonline.info. Through that site, you'll find a link to the Download Center. Also, there's the opportunity to subscribe to the Intersection Podcast. Two blogs are accessible. One is The Three, with three stories of relevance to the Christian community. The other is The Front Room, with devotional thoughts and commentary from the Meeting House. Plus, you can follow me on Twitter and access the Meeting House Facebook page. Video content is accessible as well. Again, that website address is meetinghouseonline.info. Thanks for joining me for this edition of the Intersection Podcast. I'm Bob Crittenden.